Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, May 21st, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Anastasia. Lavendar is still on her way back from our crystal quest tonight, but she'll be back with us next week when we'll be telling you all about the quest. This evening, we'll be going a little deeper into astrological transits and planetary energies, and I'll briefly recap some of the information from our Astrology 101 and 102 shows, just to kind of bring it all together. And understanding astrology helps you better understand the people in your life, as well as yourself, and tracking your transits can fine-tune your daily activities so that you always have an edge. We've got a sample chart to use as a visual aid on our site, so if you would open a new browser window, go to starseedhotline.com/headline news and refer to the second chart down the page, which has the legend for signs, symbols, planets, and glyphs off to the right. Also, be ready to write a phone number down so you can get your 12 months of personal daily transits. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed and sharing some emails from our listeners. We'd like to thank Chris and Fiona for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. We won't be able to run charts on this show, but if you know your chart and have a question about specific transits, the number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. Please remember to click follow on our page if you like the show. And after tonight, we'll be over the 300,000 listens mark. Yay, team! If you're joining us for the first time, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where you can find a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. And the entire site has been coded for Starseed activations. We have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose and Tammy for their great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go, or download them right from our show page archives onto your computer. We'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions with Tammy are also available. And if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you do get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host for this evening, Anastasia. Hello.
Hello, how are you, Arielle? Good evening, Starseed. Boy, we missed you. It's great to be back.
It is. It
yes,
is. It was
indeed
a great trip, but we're glad to be back, and we'll be telling you all about that next week, so let's
I'll be anxious to hear from everybody. That'll be great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've had about 3 weeks of news absence, and I'll tell you, while everybody was gone, I kept compiling my news dutifully, and there has been so much happening on this planet in 3 weeks. Goodness sakes. So, you know, we can't take all 51 pages tonight that I accumulated, because let me tell you, I have a lot of news. So I'm just going to take some highlights of some things that are interesting and I think that are important tonight. So, and then maybe some of the other nights we can catch up. Although, you know, I wonder if I can play catch up with the news, because the way things are happening on this planet, another week, it'll just be piled up again. So maybe some of these things we'll just have to let go and keep on trucking, because every day is something new. And I want to talk to you for a second about the fireballs that have been occurring. You know, they've slowed down a little bit, but here where I live in the South Central United States, we were sitting out on the porch the other night, and a big meteor went down to the southwest, a very large one, a big fireball. We saw it ourselves. So that is another firsthand account. That's second one this year, and within, what is it, 6 months, maybe 12 months? I don't know. I didn't keep track of the last one I saw, but I talked to you about it on the radio. But this is occurring with greater and greater frequency, and, you know, I can remember for most of my life, never saw anything like that. So to see two, you know, in a short period of time, I guess it was last summer that I saw the first one, this is a big deal. And there were four unique fireball events that happened over the United States in the last 24 hours over a wide range. The American Meteorological Society received confirmed reports that four unique fireball events all occurring near the same time, which is really interesting, at about 4 a.m., and the most recent event occurred in Arkansas, where you all were, and Missouri on May 19th. And at the same time, a bunch of witnesses recorded a fireball in Arizona. And then shortly thereafter, or around that time, two fireball meteors were spotted within an hour of each other, one over the central east coast and another in Colorado. So the sky's been lighting up again. You didn't happen to see that one in Arkansas, did you?
No, I was the I odds was on of that my way would, back by then.
Oh, yeah, okay. The odds of that anyway would be pretty slim. It's, you know, they happen so quickly. If your eye isn't on the sky, you're going to miss it generally. But there's an interesting story out of New Zealand that's just fascinating. This guy in New Zealand was in his garage talking to a neighbor. He didn't want to be named. He wanted to keep his anonymity. But he was in the garage talking with his neighbor last Monday, when a meteorite soared past his head inside of his garage. He said, "It must have missed me by a couple of feet." He thought it was a gunshot. And he felt the whizzing of the air go by. He said he didn't hear or see the meteorite, but he felt the movement of the air, and he noticed the buckets were moving in his garage. So he and his friends started looking at what was behind the buckets, what in the world happened. And they located two tiny bits of chunks of meteor about the size of a fly. And they are fascinated with this. The meteor freaks are really excited about this because it's unusual to find something like this, and it's very rare that they fall right next to a person. So the geologists that have looked at it says that they think that they're from the Eta Aquarid meteor shower that went past the planet on the 5th to the 9th of May, and this little bit of actually, they think it's from Halley's Comet. That came through on May 8th. So there it is, some little bit of stardust in the form of a tiny rock the size of a pea or a fly came breaking down through a man's garage roof right past his face. And interesting. Just a little tiny thing. Poked a hole in the roof and everything. Isn't that something?
So, came right down through the roof.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was inside his garage.
Wow.
It, like a bullet, it came down. There's a picture of it on the Internet. But there's been a bright explosion on the moon. Now, I want you all to know I've seen that myself. I was living in Santa Barbara about 15 years ago looking at the moon through a telescope and actually saw a bright explosion on the moon. But this is making the news now. It came from spaceweather.com. They say that a small boulder, hit the moon and exploded with as much energy as 5 tons of TNT. And NASA scientists say the explosion was bright enough to see with the naked eye. So that is really astonishing when you see something like that. So the moon got hit with something. You know, a lot of stuff's going on out there, up there in our orbit, I'll tell you. And there is brand new news about a big asteroid, really big, that's approaching the Earth. It's called Near-Earth Asteroid 1998 QE2. And they say it's approaching the Earth-Moon system for a flyby on May 31st. Now, of course, they let us know there's no danger of collision, thank goodness, because this is a 1.7-mile-wide space rock. And you'll be able to see it with a backyard telescope if it's mid-sized. And they're saying that this is this about the size of the asteroid that they believe caused the extinction of the dinosaurs. So it's coming by and waving at us. And they say if it impacted Earth, it would probably be an extinction event. So we're just glad it's just passing through. But again, a lot of stuff happening in the sky. And I'm sure you all heard about those big solar flares that occurred last week. Well, that was followed by some weekend coronal mass ejection strikes. A pair of them hit the Earth over the weekend, one on the 18th and another on the 19th. And they rattled Earth's magnetic field pretty good. They sparked northern lights visible as far south as Colorado, and some of the brightest appeared actually over Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Now, that's coming down really low.
Yeah.
You know, there has been some study that there may be some correlation between CMEs or coronal mass ejections and the weather. And I find it to be very interesting that these huge flares occurred with these CMEs hitting the Earth, and then we had these awful Oklahoma tornadoes. So maybe we can talk some more about that in another week. I'd like to have some experts on the news show to explain some stuff to us, but just wanted to put a heads up on that. There may be a connection. And there's a wonderful news story out. You know, a lot of us take vitamins and supplements, and we take care of ourselves, and we know the value of a simple supplement like vitamin C, but they have actually discovered now, in a very exciting find, that vitamin C kills tuberculosis. Now, this is just an amazing find. This came out of the Express Tribune, by the way. But they said on Tuesday in an article that they'd managed to kill lab-grown tuberculosis bacteria with good old vitamin C. And they're worried about tuberculosis because it has become resistant to the TB drug Isonazid. I can't say that word anyway.
Sounds like you just did.
It's all right. I'm forgiven. Anyway, this is a drug I do know that's a reducing agent that contains cysteine that kills TB. But the bacteria has developed a resistance to it, and that's been a concern for years now, really for years. It's been getting worse. So this discovery, which was occurred quite by accident, is very exciting because the simple vitamin C killed tuberculosis bacteria. So that is something, yet another reason for us to be taking our vitamins, and of course vitamin C, I think we all know how useful that is. Now, of course, they did put in the disclaimer that they haven't actually tested this on humans with tuberculosis infections, but nevertheless, those of us that know what supplements can do for us are not surprised by that. Isn't that right, Arielle?
That's absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. Well, here's kind of a sad and disturbing story, but I thought it was so shocking and so unbelievable that I wanted to share it with you tonight. It's very brief. But the BBC has produced a documentary that reveals that 50,000 children in the Democratic Republic of Congo are being held captive in churches accused of witchcraft. Now, I'll repeat that. This came out, by the way, in the International Business Times in the UK. Came out, actually today, it was in today's paper. 50,000 children are being held captive in churches in the Democratic Republic of Congo that are accused of witchcraft. Now, that makes your jaw drop. It's unbelievable. What a world we live in. Well, the connection is between religion and superstition. The documentary that they're doing on this explores the increase in the number of children abused and murdered by relatives in the name of driving out demons or of accusing their children of witchcraft. They are imprisoning children who are wetting the bed, who suffer nightmares, whose parents believe that they are possessed. And it includes all kinds of unspeakable things that they're doing to these kids. So, fortunately, now this is based on religion. The pastors that are holding them captive say that they are receiving revelations that the children are possessed. And this involves 50,000 children. So the BBC is bringing this to the fore with documentaries that they are producing. And this is brand new news to me. I had no idea that any of this was happening, and I'm sure that the rest of you probably didn't either. So we have a long ways to go for the enlightenment of the planet. But you know what's so beautiful about the time that we live in? Things are not easily concealed anymore. It's such a gift that corruption and, you know, things that need to be changed, things that are wrong, things that are deceptive, all of this eventually is coming out now for everybody to see. And that is all a part of the major awakening. You know, a lot of people that can remain asleep when there isn't revelations like this about what's going on in the world can't remain asleep for long when they hear and are made aware of what's going on out there. So this is, I think, all a part of the energy of change, and it's good that we're being made aware of it. And, of course, that needs to come to a stop naturally. So, and I also want to talk a little bit about what the climate scientists are saying now about global warming. You know, they were pretty much revealed to be in error about that through questionable data and all of that scandal that went on some time back. But now a cadre of the world's top climate scientists have decided that the major problem that we're now having is methane gas. And there is a group called the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, which has been organized by high-level climate scientists that are really ringing the bell of alarm. Now, they say that the ecosystem of the planet is being threatened by methane gas. They say methane is more than 20 times more powerful over a 100-year period per molecule than a carbon dioxide molecule. And put it another way, methane is more effectual than carbon dioxide at absorbing infrared radiation emitted from the Earth's surface and preventing it from escaping into space. So now they are feeling that methane is the cause of what they perceive as to be the increase of carbon dioxide. So that is a new study underway, and they're going on and on about it. They're just really raising Cain, which to me, as I follow this is kind of new. This seems to have come out of left field. But in 2012, expeditionary teams in the Arctic were shocked, they said, to find methane bubbling up from deep ocean sites. And in fact, in recent times, I've read articles that methane has been coming up from the Gulf of Mexico. And I suspect that they found that because of the monitoring they did because of the Gulf spill. So this could possibly be caused by cracks in the substructure of the tectonic plates, things like that. But this is what they're carrying on about now. So I just wanted to pass that on. It was a very extensive article. I will spare you all of the details. But they do say that some of the methane plumes coming out of the Arctic are more, just really more than a kilometer wide, and that they're going up into the atmosphere. So keep your ear to the ground about that for any more information. And any of you that come across articles about that, I'd appreciate hearing from you so we can kind of catch up on that and see what's going on. Well, there's a wonderful article out of the Waking Times. That's such a great magazine. I'm sure some of you are read that and follow it. But it's an article that meditation makes you more compassionate. Now, you know, science really does reveal what many of us have known all along, you know, that when we talk about the Buddhists saying that, you know, we learn to have a compassionate heart through our meditative practices, science has now established that with some studies. And we know that the world desperately needs more love, kindness, and compassion. And they say through this study that they've done that indeed these things are teachable, that people that normally are impervious to other people's suffering, in other words, they don't have empathy, which we can see happening right now in the world around us, that people have become cold and callous and that young people aren't necessarily empathetic towards others. I mean, this is the trend in our society. And when you see and when you think about the amount of distraction that people have in their minds, it could have a direct correlation to the amount of callousness, coldness, cold-heartedness, and indifference and apathy that's going on a planetary level. Because scientists have discovered, and this was a study by the Northeastern University's psychology department, they put some people together in a room. They took people that had been trained with meditation and those that hadn't. I need to read this to you just a second here. I got ahead of myself. Okay, here's about the study. And I'm quoting this now. The study, which was funded by the Mind and Life Institute, invited participants to complete 8-week trainings in two types of meditations. And after the sessions, they were put to this test. Well, the test was this. Now I'm reading it to you so I can get it straight. They were sitting in a staged waiting room with three chairs, and there were two actors in three chairs. With one empty chair left, the participant sat down and waited to be called. And then another actor that was on crutches and appearing to be in great physical pain would then enter the room. And as the one that appeared to be afflicted came in, the actors in the chair would ignore her by fiddling with their phones or opening a book. That was the baseline test. After these people were trained in meditation, they saw an immediate difference in the way people responded to someone suffering. They said that in the non-meditating participants, only 15% of the people acted to help. But among the participants who were in the meditation sessions, it went up to over 50%. Isn't that interesting? The reason for that they say scientifically, is that brain imaging studies have suggested that certain parts of the brain are involved in the empathetic response to other people's pain. And so, you know, religious traditions indicate, you know, the Buddhists and all that suggest that meditation does make us more compassionate. And this test actually does substantiate that claim. The results appear to prove that what the Buddhist theologians have long taught us, and that meditation leads us into an expansive state of consciousness, and we experience more compassion and more love for all sentient beings. And so brain scans of those undergoing meditation have shown that the practice can and does improve emotional stability. It improves response to stress. And in those who meditate regularly, significant increases across a wide area of their brains that are responsible for numerous functions beyond the rapid information processing and retrieval, which is what most of us use in this information-saturated society, goes to a deeper level and develops the brain in the area of compassion, heightened awareness, emotional control, introspection, all of those things. So, you know, this is just proof and evidence absolute of what I teach my clients all the time, of what we teach with our shamanic center, of what people have got to simply understand. The world of chaos and distraction is taking us towards alienation from one another, disconnection, psychopathology, everything that we don't want, bad decisions, confusion, spiritual disconnection, disconnection from the planet, disconnection from everything that's meaningful and long-lasting. This is damaging our way of life, our ancient way of life, and sequestering all that is good about being human. It's turning us into robots, non-feeling, moving creatures that have lost touch with our humanity. When we meditate, when we have a daily spiritual practice, and I emphasize daily, you know, sometimes you're going to miss. But as long as you're dedicated and you make a concerted effort to take time to quiet your mind, to turn off the iPhone, to turn off the computer, to turn off the television, to silence the mind, to turn off the music, whatever else kind of noise you've got going, and be with yourself, to be with nature, to connect in a spiritual way, these are the things that develop us as divine and more expansive, worthwhile entities occupying this planet. This raises our capacity to be all that we want to be, and we can't be all that we want to be without that. So I just am really excited by that study. And some really good things are coming out of science, some really awful things and some really good things. And so we're living in a time of, you know, this polarity is pulling and stretching, the positive's becoming more positive, the negative's becoming more negative. And those of us with that higher frequency of energy that came in to make the difference, you know, we've got to stay in that balance and stay in our center. And that's what meditation does for us. In our last article tonight, I want to talk about something wonderful. You know, I love plants, and I love to garden. And I know how a lot of us feel about eating meat. A lot of people that listen to us are opposed to that. Many are vegans. But there's an interesting thing that we need to consider. We might consider that plants don't want to be in a stir-fried wok than a hog wants to be in, you know, a Christmas Day pot. And I'm not meaning that as a tri-argument or to be funny. Scientific studies are showing that as scientists learn more about the complexity of plants, they're learning that they have a keen sensitivity to their environment, that they react to changes in the environment with intelligent speed. They have extraordinary numbers of tricks that they rally to fight off attackers and help get help. They summon help from each other. And the more that researchers are discovering, the less easily we can dismiss plants as just like, you know, fiber-filled things, you know, that graze on sunlight and that have no feelings and that we can eat without feeling guilty, okay? And I'm going somewhere with this, so hang on with me for a minute. But they found that plants forage for food, and, you know, that is an active verb. That's not something we think of in a passive sense. They actually look for resources like light and soil nutrients, and they anticipate when there's going to be something difficult or when they're going to have an opportunity. These scientists are looking at plants now with a far greater awareness to see that they're intelligent, they're conscious, they have aggressive mechanisms for survival, and they're not static. You know, just because they don't move or they can't walk, they still have a certain tactile response to things. They recognize different wavelengths of light. They listen to chemical signals, and they even talk. They communicate to each other through chemical signals. So, you know, touch, sight, hearing, and speech, these are the sensory modalities that we normally think of as being in animals. But plants also do the same thing. You know, they can't run away from a threat. They have to stand their ground. But they're good at avoiding being eaten. You know, they have this ability to protect themselves from insects. For instance, if an insect nibbles on the tip of a leaf, a plant's specialized cells can release chemicals to irritate the insect or exude this sticky sap to entrap the bug. And it's got many clever ways of keeping itself alive. Plants are very interested in keeping themselves alive, to keep reproducing, to communicating, and just because we humans can't hear them doesn't mean that plants don't howl. Some of the compounds that plants generate in response to insect chewing, you know, which is their gets them going. They're volatile chemicals. They just emit that serve as cries for help that communicates airborne in an airborne way to other plants. Isn't that something? Other plants nearby can sniff these chemicals and know that the neighbor plant is getting chewed up. So it's really fascinating. These are the studies that science is coming up with. And this fascinating research in all of this. And, you know, the really, I want to get back again to ancient traditions. You know, the ancient peoples used to offer thanks to the spirit of the animal when it was sacrificed to be eaten. And this is about reverence. You know, my mother used to say, let us dine, not feed. And too often in our society, we go through a fast food window, we gulp things down, you know, we stuff our faces, we eat standing up. Everything is done without conscious thought or conscious connection. And then we wonder why we're sick or why we, you know, aren't healthy. But in the ancient traditions, people would gather around a table, they would give, whatever, the ground, but they would connect between each other. They would give thanks to the animal that gave its life. They would give thanks to the plants. And in the shamanic tradition, a spiritual person is connected to and thankful to the animals and the plants that sustain us. And as spiritual people, this is something that, you know, when we talk about consciousness, let's just keep building that idea. Because it's not just the consciousness and the spirit of the animals, but of the plants, the trees, the grass, everything around us. And as spiritual people, we can begin to recognize that. We become more aware of it through meditation, through our personal spiritual practice. But also, we become more spiritually connected to the energy of everything that gives us life and sustains us by our choosing to eat consciously, thoughtfully with love and gratitude, and recognizing that on this planet, things sacrifice themselves so that other things may live. But if we are reverent, and I don't care if it's eating, you know, a steak or some carrot salad, whatever, it is, I think, appropriate to be mindful of the consciousness that has given itself to sustain us. And so again, once again, science is showing us that, you know, it's a tragedy that we have to, something must perish for us to live. But in the greater circle of life, when you look at it from a cosmic perspective, stepping back from our little, very short lifetimes, it is the way of things on this planet. And for now, while we do this, we can be grateful and you know, share that energy and turn that energy into good things. The energy that we take in, turn it into good things within ourselves, and that makes the world get better a day at a time. So, anyway, that's my little lecture and the news for tonight. But I'm excited about that plant story because I so love my plants. And I talk to them all the time. And I know that a lot of the starseed out there are the same way. And I know that you have a wonderful story about, there was a plant in your house one time, Ariel, that you put the Giza crystals around. That it grew, didn't it bloom?
Because
of that wonderful energy?
Yeah, it was a corn plant in the upstairs neighbor, and I had my Giza crystals.
Oh, that was it. Yeah.
Bed, which was under her couch where the corn plant was.
Right, right, right.
And,
well,
it bloomed, and I never knew a corn plant to bloom.
Well, now, may I just say that is a demonstration, not only of the wonderful consciousness of the crystals, but of the consciousness of the plant to receive that energy, because energy has to be exchanged. It's a reciprocal cycle. And it is just a testament not only to the consciousness of the crystals or the energy of the crystals, but the consciousness of the plant. And so, I talk to my plants all the time. They grow. Any type of higher frequency energy that's of love and nourishment and life, good life force, plants will respond to it. So, anyway, just wanted to pass that along tonight. I'll be quiet now and let you take over the show. It's been great being on tonight. I've missed everybody, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Same here. Same
nice
here.
To have you back, Ariel.
Well, thank you, and it's good to hear the news again, and we will look forward to hearing more next week. And now we are going to begin Astrology 103. And as I said earlier during the introduction to the show, we have a sample chart on our headline news page. If you go to our website at starseedhotline.com, there's a scrolling banner across the main page that says headline news, and you just click there. And the second chart down is the one that, if you would like to have a visual to go along with some explanations and transit information, that would be a good thing to have. Excuse me. So just initially here, I want to kind of just recap very briefly some of the things that I talked about in Astrology 101 and 102. And the astrological wheel has 12 houses, circles 360 degrees. So every house is about 30 degrees. Sometimes it can be more like 40 or less like 20, but it averages about 30 degrees in divisions, and you can think of it like a clock face. And the horizon, which would be the horizontal line going left to right, is the main division point that starts the first house. And then as it goes straight across the chart, if you're looking at it, it goes straight across to be the seventh house cusp as well. That is the horizon. And whatever sign was rising when you were born will be your first house cusp. And sometimes it's called the ascendant. And it's very important to know what that is. Now, you have to have the exact birth time because every 2 hours it changes signs. And when you do galactic astrology like we do, when it comes down to the minutes and degrees, it's important to
to have the birth time accurate, especially when you're looking for star markings, which we're not really going to talk about star markings tonight, but your rising sign, if it is, as on this chart, Aries, this is what we call a natural wheel because Aries rules the first house. It's the first sign, the first day of spring, Athena's birthday. That's the beginning of the astrological year and marked by the vernal equinox, which is generally March 20th, 21st, whenever the sun goes into Aries. So a natural wheel has Aries as an ascendant, which makes all of the houses then be in order around the zodiac. And if you look at on the right hand side, there's a little text kind of box with some glyphs, and it tells you like the first one says Aries, and it has a picture of the ram, and then it has the glyph for Aries, which kind of looks like ram's horns, a V with little curly Q's on it, and tells you that Mars is the ruler of Aries, and then it gives you the glyph for Mars, which is the circle with the arrow coming off about 2 o'clock. So these are all pointed in at the first house on a natural wheel. Now, if your rising sign was Taurus instead of Aries, then you have to start blending. So your first house, which is ruled by Aries, would dictate those areas of your life, which would be how you see the world and how the world sees you. But if you were born at a time of day when Taurus was rising, then your first house would have the Taurus influence. And that's where it gets, if you kind of think of like making a stew where you have different flavors blended together. Astrology is a lot of blending this with that, and whichever one is dominant would take over. Like if you put red pepper in the stew, that would probably override any salt or sugar that you might put in there. So as far as the houses are concerned, they dictate areas of activity in your life. And as I said in an earlier show, the second house would be values and belief systems. The third house would be communications, writing, and I'm giving you very thumbnail descriptions here. The fourth house would be home, family, base of operations. The fifth house is creativity, entertainment, things that you would put your name on, like even works of art or even children. The sixth house is your daily work and your health, and this can be your job. The seventh house is your relationships, one-on-one, whether it's a spouse, a friend, a mother, father, a doctor, lawyer, teacher, student, any one-on-one relationship. And that is the nature of Libra, which is the natural ruler of the seventh house. And I'm going to be focusing on the seventh house here for a lot of my examples. So keep that in mind. Now, the eighth house is about transformation. It is the house that rules sex, death, regeneration, resurrection. There is an overall theme of transmutation or transformation. The ninth house is about the higher mind and spirituality, seekers of truth. It's freedom and justice. The tenth house is your public image. It can have to do with your career, but not necessarily strictly about career. It is your reputation, your social status. The 11th house is known for hopes, wishes, and dreams. It is because it's ruled by Aquarius. It is about humanitarian concerns. We look to that for your place in humanity. And then the 12th house is like your closet, your attic, or your basement. It's where you keep things that are generally hidden. It's privacy. It can also be things that you're hiding not only from yourself but from other people, or it can just be things that you don't wish to share, not necessarily something well, the word naughty came to mind, but that's not exactly the right word. It is just the house of things that are hidden from view. It's your private area, and it rules the subconscious in your dreams. So that's the rundown of the houses. And therefore, there's a relationship between the house and the sign that is its natural ruler. So as I said, the second house, values and belief systems, there is a correlation with Taurus and values and belief systems. And it goes on down the line. So there's always a similarity, a common thread between the sign of Aries, the energy of Mars. Aries and Mars, because it's the first house, if you think of like a baby, when the baby is born, its whole focus is on itself and its own needs. So Aries and Mars tend to be about the ego and your self-center. It's also about action and energy and getting things done and physical activity and you know, it's a fire sign. So there's a lot of attributes that I'm not going to be listing in minute detail. But I want to talk about transits and aspects. As you go through, I mean, you can look up online anywhere the general description of the planets and the moon and Mercury and Mars and Neptune. You can look all that up and see all the minute details. But when you're born, you chose that moment to come in, and it's almost like I use the pool table analogy a lot. You imagine that you break the balls and they go all over the table, and those are your planets. And sometimes they're bunched up and sometimes they're spread out. And the relationship to the pool balls are the aspects. If you have two planets on your natal chart that are 120 degrees apart, then that's a trine. And trine is a very favorable, harmonious energy. And that's a blueprint for life. Those are the aspects of your natal chart. Now, transits are very similar, but rather than your natal planets in all their relationships to each other, this has to be considered from above. What are the planets doing today, and how do they interact with your natal planets? Now, imagine a room where your natal astrological chart is painted on the floor, and the room is very dimly lit, and up on the ceiling is a laser light show, and it has all the planets going around in their realistic orbits. So think of a planet shooting a beam as they're transiting across the sky, and where is that beam hitting on the floor? So if Jupiter is right over your second house, it's making an aspect to your second house, it is transiting your second house, any kind of involvement like that, then there's an expansion when it comes to money and finances and values and things like that. So you can kind of see, if you picture this, the kind of a cosmic disco ball up on the ceiling, and wherever those laser lights are hitting in your chart is where you're getting external influences. So it's so important that you know where those little laser lights are hitting in your chart, and those are your daily transits. Now, I asked you to have a pencil ready to write a phone number down, and there is a service that we've talked about before. It's called Astronumeric Service. They do have a website, but the website can be kind of confusing, so I just would recommend calling them and speaking to a person. The number is 800-627-7464. They're in Ashland, Oregon, so keep that in mind if you're calling from the East Coast, that they're going to be 3 hours behind you. Tell them you want 12 months of daily transits and that you want it on the Koch house system, and that's spelled K-O-C-H, because that is what we use for galactic astrology. And they will send you a booklet
with 12 months, 12 months of daily transits. And it's laid out day by day, and it tells you, you don't have to know a thing about astrology to employ this. Then also, you, if you go to Amazon or any kind of like mainstream book place, look for the reference book that will go with this, and it's called Planets in Transit, written by Robert Hand. It is the definitive work for understanding planetary transits. So this would be the position of today's stars, planets, and sun and moon, and how that interacts with your natal chart. In this 12 months of daily transits, it will tell you at the top which house, which one of your houses the sun is in right now. So if you had a natural wheel with the sun actually just moved into Gemini, so that would be in the third house if your rising sign were Aries. And there in this reference book, it tells you how that will manifest. So as I said earlier, I'm going to be focusing on the seventh house because it's about relationships and how you interact with other people, whether it's your mate or a teacher or a doctor, lawyer, any one-on-one relationship. When the sun is in your seventh house, regardless of whether you have a natural wheel, doesn't matter what sign is ruling the seventh house on your particular chart, but when the sun is in the seventh house, and I'm just going to read this from the Planets in Transit book because this is the kind of thing that you need to know. Excuse me. Sun in the seventh house. At this time of year, you should learn more about yourself through intimate one-to-one encounters with others. You will form working units with other people for various purposes, and through these units, you will understand more about the effects that you have upon others. Already existing relationships of this sort will serve the same purpose as you become more conscious of how you operate within them. One of the most important such relationships is marriage, whether or not it's a legalized arrangement. If you are married, use this time to examine your relationship with your spouse and to discover what needs this relationship does and does not fill in your life. Try to discover how well you fill your spouse's needs as well. In any seventh house relationship, whether it's a marriage, business partnership, or other kind of partnership, you and your partner function as a unit, either in a specific area, as with a business partner, or in all areas, as with a spouse. For your own benefit, you must be as good for your partner as he or she is for you. This is not the time of year when you should try to go it alone in any type of activity. You should try to work with someone else, or at least seek out the opinion of another person in an advisory capacity. In business, this is a good time to consult experts in whatever field you're involved in. A consultant, lawyer, or other specialist may fit the requirements. The same applies to your personal life, where you may benefit from some type of counseling if you have not been able to solve certain problems. You might consult a doctor, lawyer, psychologist, psychiatrist, or even an astrologer. Imagine that. Such people can give you an independent perspective against which to measure your own views of the situation. Sometimes the one-to-one encounter may take the form of a conflict. Conflict can be creative because it forces you to examine your own position more thoroughly and thus become more aware of yourself. You and your opponent form a pair, just as you and a partner do. For this reason, the seventh house is connected with conflicts at law, and this could be a time when you have legal dealings of this sort, although this would have to be confirmed by other indications in your chart. So that's what it says about sun in the seventh house. And, of course, the sun is a month in each sign, therefore roughly a month in each house. And it really helps you to know where these areas of influence, because this is external influence. And sometimes people think that that things are happening and they misread why they're happening, because they never stop to consider that this is just a transit. And when it's over, whatever the issue is, whether it's good or bad, will be over as well. Now, I'm going to talk about the planet Venus, because that's a very fun planet. It's about entertainment and good social times, and Venus always brings about, it's a planet with a negative polarity, which means that it draws things to it. And I use the visual of, you think of Venus, the goddess, lying on the chaise lounge, and someone's peeling her a grape, and they come and bring her everything. That is, Venus attracts, it draws to. Whereas Mars, being the opposite of that, it goes out and gets by itself. So, now when Venus is in the seventh house, this is one of the best positions for all relationships, love affairs, relationships with partners, with coworkers, even with enemies. Ego forces are so in tune at this time that you can create a proper balance between yourself and everyone you meet, which makes all your encounters with others work out smoothly. In your marriage or other love relationship, you'll be able to express affection easily and make your feelings clear to your partner. If other indications concur, a wholly new love may enter your life under this transit. In other partnerships, including professional ones, you're able to understand the needs of your partner so that you can arrive at maximum understanding and work together harmoniously. Be careful not to let your amiability prevent you from standing up for your own rights. You need not worry about alienating your partner, because you will be able to make it clear that you're working for your mutual benefit. If you're in conflict with someone in your life and would like to make peace, this is the best of all transits for doing so. Even persons who are openly hostile to you will be receptive to your overtures. This extends even to legal confrontations, where strong potential exists for settling lawsuits out of court. So those are just some examples of why you should know where your transiting planets are and how they are influencing your chart. Because obviously, if you had a planet like Mars, which is very much about yourself, your needs, your energy, your desires, if you put that in the 12th house, which is about service to others, it may cause some ripples. But if you know it's there, you would just channel your energy into some endeavor that satisfies both. So that's why it's so important for navigation. Now, excuse me. If you have a planet, let's say you had a planet in the seventh house, and a transiting planet is coming around the wheel, and it enters the seventh house, when it gets to within 1 degree of that planet that you have. Now, if you look on this sample chart, if you are looking at the sample chart, you'll see that Saturn is in the seventh house on this chart, and it happens to be in Scorpio. So Saturn is a planet of boundaries, limitations. It is the authority of figures, the rules, the regulations. I kind of sometimes think of Saturn as the galactic police, because it's by the book, and you think about the rings of Saturn, it holds everything in its proper place. And but it's about duty and responsibility. I sometimes think of Saturn as that you have to eat your vegetables, and even if you don't like them, you have to eat your vegetables because they're good for you. And that's kind of like your parents telling you that you have to do that for your own good. And it's always for your own good. But let's say you have a planet like Venus coming around through the houses. Venus has entered your seventh house. When it gets to 10 degrees, 29 minutes of Scorpio on this particular chart, it's within 1 degree. So that is what is called the entering or approaching that transit, that conjunction. Conjunction means one on top of the other. And when Venus, which is fun-loving, go to the mall, buy pretty things, social entertainment, it's very much about amiability and the hostess with the mostest. That's the energy of Venus. Well, when it lands on top of Saturn, it tends to maybe make you feel a little isolated and maybe not too encouraged, maybe not a lot of fun. But it does have a usefulness in your life. But Venus transits don't last very long, probably 2 days with this one. But if you had knowledge that that's what that is, you won't be blaming other people or looking at yourself as like, how come I feel this way? You know, when you understand it, you can get the most out of it and see how use that structure of Saturn, that building strong foundations, you might create something of beauty that will be everlasting. That would be a way to channel that energy rather than get beat up by it. And that's always a possibility when you don't know what's happening, you don't know how to navigate. It's kind of a surfing the energies. If you don't know which way the tide's going, you could really get beat up by it. But if you really get it, you can turn it into something positive and forward-moving. So that is an example of when a transiting planet comes and sits right on top of another planet that you have, when it's exactly conjunct. Now, if you had Venus 120 degrees away from that Saturn, that is a trine. Trines are always a favorable energy flow. It would be less disruptive or less frustrating than sitting right on it conjunct. It would take the best of both worlds and blend them together. Whereas if it were square, which is another aspect of 90 degrees, it would probably, if you didn't handle it right, have the worst parts of both, where you go out and spend a whole lot of money and then beat yourself up over it, especially if it was something frivolous. So understanding your transits is so important, and that's kind of like, I know I'm driving this point into the ground, but it's so important. Now, with any wheel, wherever your ascendant is, if you look, go back to the first house cusp, if your rising sign, which is the first house cusp, is Aries, then the ruler of Aries, if you look at that white text box legend thing over, you can see that Mars rules Aries. So then you look in this chart to see where Mars is, and you'll find it in the 12th house at 8 degrees of Pisces. And this chart I ran on February 12th, so it's just for example. It doesn't, it's obsolete as far as what's happening right now is concerned. But that would be your chart ruler. Whatever planet rules your rising sign is your chart ruler. It is kind of the if you're a pyramid, it's kind of the capstone on your pyramid, the thing that really, the locomotive engine on your train. It rules everything. Not to say that everything does have an influence, but that's kind of a defining point in your chart. So in this particular chart with Mars in Pisces in the 12th house being the chart ruler, remember what I said about Mars being the self-assertion, the ego, the self-centering kind of energy of action? Well, in the 12th house, the 12th house is about service to others and, you know, working for charitable ends. Mars doesn't really like to be in the 12th house, so because it's about self, and the 12th house is about others. So if you can find a way to express that energy where you feel good about yourself by putting a lot of energy into service to others, then Mars will be very happy, and that will be the defining point of you, because it's your chart ruler. Now, let's say that you had Taurus for your ascendant, for your rising sign. On this chart, Venus is, where is she? Oh, in the 11th house. So let's say in this chart, the 13 Taurus was actually the first house cusp, then Venus in Aquarius in the 11th house would be your chart ruler. You just can refer to these and figure it out if you know what your rising sign is. And remember, you have to have your exact birth time to determine that, because 5 minutes would be enough to make or miss a star marking, but within 2 hours it would be a completely different sign. So in this instance, if Taurus were the rising sign, then Venus would be the chart ruler. Venus in Aquarius in the 11th house. This would be a humanitarian, a person who exhibits grace when it comes to dealing with others, and maybe a little bit unique, because Aquarians are known as the soloists of the galaxy. Each Aquarian is different from each other and different from everybody else, and that's kind of the way they like it. So that is why it's important to know your exact birth time, so you know what your ascendant is, therefore you know what your chart ruler is. Let's see, what do I want to talk about next? Just to give you an idea, the smaller planets, which we call the personal planets, because they move so quickly, even if someone were born just a couple months away from you, all of their little planets would be totally different. The larger planets, which are called generational planets, like starting with Uranus, that is 7 years in one sign. So, and Neptune is 14 years, and Pluto 21 years. So those are more generational planets. When you have a very large planet that moves that slowly, making an aspect or a transiting a natal planet, those are the ones you really need to pay attention to, because they last for so long. They really establish the eras or the phases or chapters of your life, where, you know, if you have a Venus transit, it's over in 2 days. Not a lot of damage can happen, you know, if maybe you spend too much money at the mall, but the larger planets are the ones that really take you through the recreation of yourself. And certainly when any large planet crosses your ascendant, it is marking a new cycle in your life. The planet Pluto, generally, as I said, is 21 years in each sign, has a great influence for change. Pluto is what we think of as nuclear energy. And it's not good or bad, it's what you do with it. And a lot of the larger planets are like that. Uranus is about sudden changes. And when you have, especially taking right now, because Uranus is in Aries, it is producing a lot of new changes. Remember, Aries is the first sign of the zodiac. It's a new cycle. And with Uranus in Aries, there are a lot of new cycles starting for people. Always, I mean, check and see, where is Uranus in your chart right now? And that's where you're going to see changes that might come out of nowhere. Depending on how attached you are to your own status quo, that will determine how upsetting it may be. But if you just go with the flow and know that Uranus is showing you places where you might be stuck, it is always a good idea to recognize this Uranian energy, because if you don't handle it, it can really be disruptive. Because if you are hanging on to something that is not good for you, whether it's a relationship, a situation, a job, a location, if it's not good for you, Uranus will have a more pronounced effect, and things will just fly out of nowhere. Being able to go with it, to go with the flow, to recognize the energy and not resist it is the best way to take the kind of take the shock out of it. But if you're really, really hanging on to something, it's like a balloon that is filled up with some toxic energy, and you're hanging on to that balloon because you can't move on it. You can't get away, or you whatever. Uranus is going to come along. It's just going to pop that balloon, and all that stuff's going to come down on top of you. So you better understand where it is in your chart, where the changes may be focused, and pay attention to it because it's really showing you something useful. The only time that it is disruptive is when you won't see the truth or you won't pay heed to what it's trying to show you. And if you manage to get through a Uranus transit that's really having an impact on another, like your moon or a very influential planet, then when it comes to the next aspect, let's say it was conjunct, it was on top of your moon, and you just held on and you wouldn't give up this whatever thing is that is holding you back, then when it comes to the next point where it gets a clear shot, like the balls on the pool table, when it gets a clear shot at your moon again, it's going to hit you again. And then when it gets to the square, it's going to hit you again. And when it hits the trine, it's going to hit you again. So it's best to deal with it quickly rather than keep having it come back and it's like running you over a whole bunch of times. Now, Jupiter is kind of a dividing planet there, Jupiter and Saturn, because Jupiter stays 1 year in each sign and Saturn stays about 2.5. And Jupiter always brings expansion. Sometimes it's like good luck falls out of the sky. It's unlimited. It makes you seek. So always pay attention to what transiting Jupiter is doing, because those transits do last for a while, and it gives you a really good chance to make the most of it. So with that, let me flip back here to my studio page, because I know we have some questions of people that are waiting with some questions, and I'll do my best to answer if I can. Like I said, I can't run charts, but if you can tell me where your planets are, I can look things up for you here. So first of all, I'm going to talk to Linda. Hello, Linda.
Hi, ladies. How are you?
We're doing just fine. So you have a question?
I do have a question. I actually have a triple grand air trine going on right now, and I'm also about either it's happening now, it's just started, or I'm going to have a Jupiter conjunct Jupiter. And I'm wondering how to benefit from that. I've been waiting.
Okay. when you say you have a grand trine in air, did you say?
Yes.
Is that natally? Or
yes.
Are they transiting planets aspecting a natal planet making the trine?
That's a really good question. The way that it was described to me, because I noticed it, was that natally and then there's aspects. That makes sense?
Okay.
Oh,
well,
without
seeing your chart, all I can tell you, and especially with Jupiter conjunct Jupiter, that means that your natal Jupiter is in Gemini?
Yes.
Okay. This is all about your brain, your thought process, information, communication. The quality of air is always about, it's cerebral. So information, higher mind with the trine, and a grand trine at that, and whether it's transiting planets making a grand trine to a natal planet or whether you have the grand trine in air on your natal chart, this is a very agile mind, and you may have, Anastasia was talking about meditation earlier. I think this would be a really good time for that because of the information that can come to you while these doors are open. And
okay.
Also learning about things like astrology. This is a very good time. Jupiter is about higher understanding, higher spirituality, and higher information. And with that all happening, it's just, I'm just seeing like a flower that's opening, but it's in your brain, it just opening up, and all kinds of information. And this goes also when you're talking to others. It's not just you're sitting there and they're beaming all kinds of downloads to you. It can also be between you and other people, because Gemini is also about, the quality of two. It's twice as much energy. It is also about polarity. It's about duality. And it can have to do with another person or other people. So this information exchange, this is all, I mean, just your brain is going to be going so fast. And Jupiter, I'm trying to remember, I think a Jupiter transit will last about 6 weeks. I would have to look that up. Plus, you know, there is also, and this is for everyone's benefit, I am not talking about retrograde times, because Jupiter is direct right now, but when a planet goes retrograde, it can extend to a great degree how long things last. And then they turn direct again, and then they come back over. So Jupiter can go back and forth across itself or any other planet and really extend that time. But generally, when everything is moving in a forward direction, I think it lasts about 6 weeks. You'd probably have to check me up on that, because I can't recall at this moment. But does that kind of answer your question, I hope?
Yeah. I've always had an understanding that when, you know, your Jupiter return happens, you know, you expect all these amazing things to happen. And I'm like, okay, when does this happen? Mm-hmm. When are we moving forward with this?
Did you get the phone number for getting your daily transits?
I sure did.
Okay. Well, if you like, I have it right here in front of me. And for the benefit of anyone else who's having a Jupiter return, just let me read what Robert Hand has to write about it, because, as I said, he is the world authority on, okay, you've got Jupiter, conjunct Jupiter. Okay, I'm doing this with one hand here. Jupiter conjunct Jupiter. This transit occurs at 11 or 12-year intervals when you are 11, 23, 35, or so on. It indicates the beginning of a new cycle of growth and progress. However, for people who are not very skilled in astrology, this transit is often the focus of exaggerated expectations.
Right.
They expect sudden windfalls, great wealth or luck, and all kinds of wonderful opportunities. And these things do happen sometimes with this transit, but most people should expect more subtle but equally useful effects. Events now, such as meetings with persons or even exchanges in your psyche, open the way for you to become wiser and more mature and have a broader understanding of the world. At this time, you will reach out consciously and unconsciously and ask more of the world, but at the same time, you are willing to give more to the world. This transit can make you feel either more demanding or more giving towards others, but you are not likely to get much out of it if you think only of what you can get. The law of conservation of energy in the universe says that you can transform the energies in your life from one form to another, but you cannot create them out of nothing. This is why you must put as much time into the world as you expect to get from it. This transit represents a time when you should see whether you are doing that in your life. Concretely, you can expect persons who are good for you to come into your life, or circumstances will arise that give you some increased freedom or an opportunity to do something that you've never done before. Educational opportunities may come to you at this time, or a chance to travel. Sometimes this transit does, in fact, bring about financial advantage, but you should not sit around passively waiting for it to happen. This is an excellent time to invest or expand in business, as long as you are very careful not to overdo it or overextend yourself. And then you'd add that into the fact that it's in Gemini, which is why the emphasis will be on information understanding education. Okay?
Got it. I got it.
Okay. Yeah, and make sure you get your daily transits because it will really fine-tune a lot of things. And then, and I say this to everybody, after a year or so of reading just these little paragraphs, it's only like three paragraphs for each transit that you may be having, you'll learn astrology passively. And then you just look in your book, it's like, oh, Jupiter conjunct Jupiter, I know what that is now. And anymore. So, and can I, do you know which house this is in?
Yeah, it's in the 12th house.
Oh, wow. That will be really a lot of more spiritual expansion, psychic expansion, intuitive expansion. Also, there is that outreaching to other people, being of service to other people, to groups of people, and possibly teaching other people or being a student. It can be either one.
Hmm. Okay.
So pay attention to your dreams. You may get information.
Yeah, my dreams are always always very vivid. If it's spiritual information, I always
mm-hmm.
retain that. Because it's usually spiritual energies that will deliver. I always retain that.
Good.
Yeah. So can I ask one last question about something that you made a comment on?
Okay.
About a starseed marking?
Uh-huh.
You mentioned it earlier. Can you identify what certain degrees in your chart, which specifically your starseed marking is?
Well, 25, 26, and 27 degrees of any sign is a starseed marking. There are other codes that we know of, but those are the main markings.
So if you have any of these degrees, does it indicate, I guess, which, you know, galactic place you stem from, or does it just
well,
is it just a marking?
If it's 25, 26, or 27 degrees of Taurus or Scorpio, that is the mark of the Pleiades. But not all starseed come to this planet, and they don't want their Pleiadian patch on their arm, so that they kind of want to move quietly behind the scenes. But there can be other markings, as the markings that we just used for our starseed crystal quest. If you have 25, 26, 27 degrees of Aquarius, Leo, or Capricorn, Cancer, those are also related to the Pleiades. So it's kind of not a hard and fast thing that if you don't have the mark of the Pleiades, you have nothing to do with the Pleiadians. That's not true. You may have other markings that indicate that you have been working with the Pleiadians. And remember, the star of Bethlehem has 33 different species working together as family. And there are intermarriages, you know, interspecies marriages. So many of us have, it could have Pleiadian and Sirian heritage.
What I was going to ask you, because I know that I have 13 degrees in Cancer in my ascendant, and I know that that's Sirius. So that's why when I heard you say the start, I'm like, wait a minute, I've heard this before. So that's why.
And there's also a connection to the ascended masters with that, which is different from they work in conjunction with. But the Ascended Masters are a different group.
Okay.
So, what house is that on?
You mean the 13 degrees?
Uh-huh.
It's in Cancer, and it's my ascendant. And it's in my first,
okay.
Well, it's my ascendant.
So look in your chart to where the moon is, and whatever house and sign the moon is, that's your chart ruler. Because if Cancer is your ascendant, the moon rules Cancer, and wherever that is in your chart, you really go a lot on intuition and feeling, and it's a very feminine planet. The moon is not really a planet, but it's it's of the feminine polarity. So there's a lot of the divine feminine in that.
Oh.
So I hope this answers your question. And we do have one more person with a question that I would like to get to. And
sure.
And if you have further questions, you can. Have you had your starseed confirmation done?
No. I plan on getting one.
Yeah. I think you'll find it very helpful.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you mind if I listen?
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
I'm just going to put your mic back on mute, and thank you so much for calling in, Linda.
And thank you for having me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. So, next I am going to talk to Lenise, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did pronounce it correctly. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris, our switchboard operator, for spelling it out phonetically for me. okay, so you have a question about a transit?
Yes. I was told that I am having a Chiron return. My Chiron is in Pisces, and it's in the seventh house.
Chiron in the seventh house in Pisces.
Yes.
Wow. Let me go back to my chart here. Chiron is an asteroid, and it's known as classical astrology, the wounded teacher. And did you say what degree it's at?
I don't have my chart in front of me. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, there's a they call Chiron the wounded teacher, and Chiron is representing what you are here to teach others because you had to learn the hard way. And with it being in Pisces, this would have to do with self-sacrifice. And I hope that. In your current life, you can see that self-sacrifice is a trap, and it's a device that has been imposed on us. And a lot of people think that if they sacrifice themselves, that they're going to be rewarded in heaven, and that's just a deception through organized religion. So you are having that come back. The thing that you had to learn about is what you're here to teach others, to help them to not have to go through that by learning by your own experience. And I feel like it's a closure, like you're done with that. That you learned that lesson, you can pass it on to others, but you don't, that cycle is over, and you don't need to continue to learn about that. It's like you've completed, you've got your diploma, you graduated from that, and you don't have to. And with, yeah, Chiron in Pisces is got to be about past suffering and wounding and possibly sacrificing or being sacrificed, and help other people understand that there is no reward for sacrifice. It's just a sacrifice, and it doesn't gain you any good karma. It's just it's a trap.
So that's over.
Yeah. When it's come back around, you have completed that cycle. So take the good that you learned from it, pass it on to others, but you don't need to repeat that anymore. You don't need to do that anymore. This is more now about the spiritual understanding and helping to teach others. And you don't know what house it's in?
It's in the seventh house. You mean the Chiron?
Oh, Chiron. Your natal Chiron is in the seventh house?
Yes, and it's in Pisces.
Okay, so this definitely has to do with your one-on-one relationships, and if you have, let's see, I'm showing transiting. I'm looking at my astrology program now. Transiting Chiron at 13 Oh, it's at 13 Pisces. So, yeah, this is really heavily tied to Christianity, to ascended masters, you could have been a Christian martyr, and that doesn't need to be repeated anymore. And I don't think that was ever the plan, that Jesus's life would necessitate other people sacrificing themselves like he did. That wasn't really what he had in mind.
Yeah, I understand that.
Pardon me?
I said I understand that.
Right. Yeah. Well, organized religion has taught a lot of people that if you want to be holy, you need to be suffering because Jesus suffered. So if you want to be like Jesus, you need to suffer.
Yeah.
And that is not what he was here for. Not at all what he was here for. And take that as you have closure on this now. And in your one-on-one relationships, if you have found that in the past you have put your own needs on the back shelf, on the back burner, and sacrificed your dreams for someone else's, that has run its course. And you don't need to do it anymore.
I'm feeling that because everything is no. I'm telling people no, and I'm not doing anything that I don't want to do and nothing that's not for my highest good. You know, I've been saying things like that, and I really mean it because I see how I have been self-sacrificing, and it hasn't been pleasant. It hasn't felt good, and I'm still kind of having some repercussions from not putting myself first right now. And
that's right. And plus, the other people in your life have learned that you do that, and when you stop doing that, there's going to be some kicking and screaming. It's like, well, what do you mean you're not going to, you know, give me the shirt off of your back? You always did before.
Right.
But, you know, 2013, there's two words that I really think from listening to a bunch of people around the world say the same thing, the two words that everyone should really take to heart and consider is boundaries and balance. You need to have boundaries for other people, what you will do, what you won't do. And if people will not respect your boundaries, then they don't respect you, and they are not for your higher good. And balance, no matter what happens, you have to hold your balance and don't, fall off your tricycle. Just maintain balance. And I've even gone so far as to practice standing on one foot. And it's amazing how that translates in your life. And just see how long you can stand on one foot before you start falling over. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. And that's kind of one of the basic tenets of yoga, but balance and boundaries.
That's what I've been getting to, balance and boundaries. I've even been talking about it and seeing how I need to balance my life. I think I'm in a job now where I'm sacrificing myself for money because it is miserable, and it drains my energy. The hours are too long, and when I'm done there, I can't do anything else. And I see that as self-sacrificing as well. Even though I know I got to work and pay my bills, it's self-sacrificing. That's what it feels like, and that's how I have described it to myself, selling my soul.
If you track your daily transits, look for a window. Do you know what your rising sign is?
It's Virgo. Mars.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see, that's Virgo has a built-in need to be of service to other people, and that is a great trait of Virgo. But you have to know where to draw the line. You know, you can be of service to your family and let humanity kind of drift off into the distance. So, you know, focus that Virgo energy on serving a larger number of people, not just a few friends or family members that are used to draining you. Now, as far as the if your ascendant is Virgo, then I don't know your chart, but just knowing that, that would put, let's see, what we have in Virgo right now, anything? Yeah. Well, now I'd have to look at your chart really, because when I'm starting to look at transits and calculate math in my head, if I don't have the right numbers, it's not going to come out right.
Well, I know my chart. What is it that you wanted to look at?
What degree is your ascendant?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know the degrees. I pretty much know where everything is, but I haven't gotten to the degrees. And that
right,
question
yeah.
has come up a lot, so I guess I'm going to study that and find out.
Yeah, well, get the Daily Transit book that I mentioned earlier in the show and the reference book so that you know how to interpret it. And I was just looking because Pluto is in an Earth sign, so right now you've got Pluto possibly trine your ascendant, which is really good for transforming the way you dole out your service. But Pluto's at 11, so if your ascendant is only like 1 or 2, it's not quite making an aspect, not quite making a transit yet. So that's why I was asking about the degrees. But let's see. Right now, there are so many planets in Gemini that there's a lot of information, a lot of communication going on. And this is for everybody. For everybody, there's a restlessness. And wait, when you look at your daily transits, look for things transiting your second house or your eighth house, or planets like Jupiter transiting your sixth or tenth house, those would be the windows when you go find a job that you love to do. You know,
okay.
And you can start looking now, but don't make your move until the wind is at your back. But, you know, I don't think it's written anywhere that Lenise must work at this place and you're not allowed to work at any place else. So just put it out there. Just put it out there that, I mean, wake up in the morning and say, I love my new job. I feel so wonderfully fulfilled. I just love the way everybody gets along together, until you convince yourself that you have a new job. And watch how quickly it comes.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. And I'm also interested in that starseed chart. I hadn't heard that before, but I would be very interested in that. How do I get one of those and find out where I came from?
Well, you go to our website, starseedhotline.com, and look for the starseed confirmation. It's called the Stage 1 reading, and that's when I will look at your chart. I will record an MP3 and tell you about your star markings. It's not a full-blown all of your planets. I only focus on the star marking planets, and that helps to define your natural state and your rites of passage in this life. And then I record it on an MP3 and mail it to you. Email it to you. And that would be
okay.
A good place to start. And there's a whole lot of information on our website that can really open up a lot of windows for everyone, really. And especially with all these planets in Gemini right now, there is a thirst for information and knowledge out there. And we got it on the site.
Starseedhotline.com.
You got it.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thank
You're
you
so welcome. Me. You're so welcome.
Okay.
And further, if you want to go on to a Stage 2, you can get a lot more in-depth information. But the Stage 1 is easy to get for a basic foundation of understanding.
Okay.
So I hope that helps you, Lenise. I've got one more caller that I'm going to take before we say goodnight. And I will hopefully be looking at your chart soon, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay, and I'll continue to listen.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, as soon as the caller comes out of our screening room with Chris and Fiona, I will find out what her question is. And in the meantime, I was just saying that right now, and this is for everybody, we have the Sun, Mercury, Venus, and Jupiter all in Gemini. And think about Quicksilver, the metal Quicksilver. It doesn't hold still. It's very much about movement and information from all different areas, all different sources. And your job is going to be to sort it out and what resonates with you. You will be getting information coming from all different directions because there's so many planets in Gemini right now. And really the question is what resonates with you. Truth knows its own source, as Lavendar says. So when you hear stuff, if it just doesn't ring true, go on to the next thing. And when you find something that really, really hits in your solar plexus, in your heart, and you just know that this is your truth, then start building it and weaving it together. So next we are going to talk to Cindy as soon as I get the mic open. Hello, Cindy.
Hi there.
Hi. What kind of question do you have about your chart?
Well, I was wondering, Jupiter's getting ready to hit my Mars in my chart, which is on the cusp of my ninth house. Can you tell me what that tells you? You know, what that is all about?
Transiting Jupiter is about to conjunct your natal Mars, and is it actually in your ninth house? Actually mm-hmm. in the ninth house. Okay.
It's on the
I'm going to give you Robert Hand's description, but this is going to be a lot of energy in your higher development. Let's see, Jupiter conjunct Mars, and remember, Jupiter is at home in the ninth house. Jupiter
uh-huh.
rules Sagittarius, and whether or not your ninth house cusp is Sagittarius, it doesn't matter. The ninth house is still the home of Jupiter, so it has a much stronger influence. And here is Jupiter conjunct Mars, according to Robert Hand. This is a very exuberant transit with high energies. You feel physically strong and fit, and you are more willing to be active and take chances at other times. Vigorous physical activity is one of the best ways to use this energy, which strengthens your body and allows you to accomplish much more than usual. This is quite a common transit when women give birth, for that is the kind of physical action that it seems to favor especially. However, in itself, this transit does not indicate pregnancy. A key word for this transit in one book is fortunate action, which sums up its strength quite adequately. Almost anything that you direct your energies to, especially an activity that requires a lot of energy, will seem to flow and happen as if you were not making any effort at all. It is important to realize, however, that you are in fact working quite hard. After this transit is over, and even during it to some extent, you will need to stop and rest a while. One of the problems at this time is that because you don't realize how hard your body and mind are working now, there is a real danger that you'll overwork yourself. Certainly, if you are not in excellent physical condition, you should not take up any heavy physical work without preparing for it, but that is just what you might do with this transit. The same tendency can also mean that you will be accident-prone under this influence. It's not that the transit is accident-prone, but that you are inclined to take foolish risks on the assumption that nothing can go wrong. This is a good time to begin a new project as long as you don't overextend yourself. You have much more initiative than usual, and you can accomplish a great deal by yourself. Working with others may be frustrating because it's hard for you to put up with their slower pace. Often this transit is expressed through doing something that requires a magnificent sense of timing or planning, or you will do something that works out very well for you in the long run. Even if it doesn't require great energy, it will pay great dividends in the future. That's a very, very big transit, but that is true. Jupiter doesn't know any limit, and Mars is almost like inexhaustible energy. So when you put the two of those together, You know, you might just decide that you want to climb Mount Everest when you haven't even, you know, done the Stairmaster. So don't go way too far with it. Make sure you know what your physical limits are if you're going to do something very physically demanding.
Well, you know, what's interesting is it also chimes my moon and my ascendant sign.
Oh, well, that, you know, that, I'm glad you
said that. At the same
time. Yeah, that that brings in more dynamics. The point that I made earlier in the show about, like, making a stew, so that was just Jupiter conjunct Mars. But now you're going to throw in a trine, which is a favorable aspect to your ascendant and to your moon. Is your ascendant and moon conjunct, or are they trine each other?
They're
trine each other?
That's a grand trine. Yeah.
So that's making a grand trine in your chart in what sign did you say it was? It's got to be Gemini,
Well, my
right?
Libra is my ascendant, and Mars is Gemini, and Aquarius is the moon.
Okay, so again, the air signs are very much cerebral, mental, intellectual, your mind working very well, and the moon and Mars in Gemini, and what was the third one on the other side in Aquarius?
No, the moon is in Aquarius, the ascendant's
in Aquarius.
Libra.
Ascendant is in Libra. Okay,
yep.
Let me hang on a second. Because it's because the moon is involved in this, this can also be a lot of
is this
psychic...
like selling a home?
your moon in Aquarius is in, is that in the fifth
house? My fourth
house. Fourth house.
Fourth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it, because then Jupiter would be trying your moon. Your moon's in the fourth house, and the fourth house is about real estate.
Oh, great.
You're also going to want to look and see, though, make sure that planets like Saturn or Neptune are not making an aspect, because that will bring in trials and tribulations or out-and-out deception. So make sure that Neptune and Saturn don't enter into the mix.
Okay.
Because that will alter the frequency. If we're just talking about Jupiter, Mars, the moon, and your ascendant, then that could go very well. But there's more to consider than that. So I don't want to tell you, sure, go ahead, and me not knowing that your Neptune was in the fourth house as well. So,
well, actually, my Neptune is in the 12th house, and it trines my moon.
Well, trine is usually not problematic. It's a favorable flow, but it does have a little, it does have access. So just make sure you read the fine print.
Okay.
Make sure you read the fine print.
Okay.
But yeah, it should be a good time to move.
Oh, great! Because I'm just getting ready to put a sign up.
You might want to talk to Lavendar about that in particular. Because she'll take a look at your whole chart, and I don't have your whole chart here, so I wouldn't know. But she's really good at tracking those kind of things.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
okay,
for listening.
Bye.
Bye. Well, we have no one else with questions, and that must conclude our show. Unless Chris or Fiona has a question. I think, Chris, do you have a question? Uh-huh. I'm going to open your mic up. Chris, do you have a question? Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I
can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I do have a question, but it's not really related to what you're talking about tonight. And it formulated at the beginning of the show. I'm wondering about... You know, when babies come in, you said that we pick our time that we come in. What about what's your feeling about induced birth? You know, when babies are induced and it's not the natural process, Is that something that the soul chooses, or is that interference?
You know, I think it could be a little of both,
okay.
Or it could be one or the other, because certainly sometimes, and I was just talking to someone about this, whose mother had several children, all cesarean. So the soul knew when they came in that that they would not be able to come out when they wanted to, but there is some area where the soul knew ahead of time, and maybe even influencing the doctor or mother's decision to do it at this time.
Okay.
I'm sure there are cases, however, when the child was, labor was induced or cesarean was done because of some other, you know, the mother fell down or something. In that case, that would be a question for Lavendar. Because I don't know. I mean, obviously, if it's within a days, they may have a lot of the same planets. But, you know, people that are born prematurely due to some external force, I don't know. I really don't know. Lavendar would know how that plays out. Or if there is actually some divine intervention that makes it happen at that moment. You know, it's a chicken and the egg thing, maybe.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you answered that, because I sort of had an attitude about, the doctor choosing the time and, over the natural process. But I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, and there could be, I mean, I've looked at a chart, at a person's child's chart, and the child, the labor was induced, and the doctor picked the time so that he didn't have to do it over the weekend. And the child was full of star markings. So I have to say that the overseers, that child's guardians, celestial ET guardians, who's to say that they didn't thought adjust the doctor to pick that moment?
Sure.
You know, it could be all of the above. But it's a very good question, and it's one that that I'm going to be asking Lavendar next week.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Well, a very good show. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I am going to be wrapping it up now, and I want to say thank you to Chris and Fiona for holding down the switchboard tonight, and also Anastasia. Thank you. And we'll be back next week. Lavendar will be back, and we will have stories from our crystal quest, so you don't want to miss that. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in, and we are glad to be back. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.